title, and I'm involved in this project intensively, if not or extensively, if not intensively. The bulk of the work is being done by and has been done by others, Frank Hagen in particular, and Ellie Best from the Environmental Laboratory, and we've had some university help also. This part of a larger project extends over 3 or 4 years, and I'm going to talk just about kind of the preliminary gross overview results, conclusions, probably not so much conclusions, but just where we are with it. It deals with grossly phyto remediation, or trying to identify plants that are suitable for that on military ranges. And, you know, military ranges are critical to the military operation. That's a large part of what they do on training lands is related to warfare, fighting, weaponry, and that sort of thing. So it's a high priority to the military and to the end of the nation right now. But concurrently, these ranges are contaminated with a number of products, contaminants, and so forth, explosives being high on the list because those are what's most commonly used, but there's a number of others that come into play too at different times depending on the type of military operation. And this, of course, then leads to contamination of soil and water, coincident concerns over runoff, pollution, and a bunch of other environmental factors, including plant degradation, uptake by animals, toxicity. It's a whole host of ecological side effects, if you will, that that may or may not come into play. But concurrently, as we know, certainly the military doesn't have a lot of opportunity or a lot of reason to discontinue this sort of thing, so they need to continue those sort of activities. The management of military ranges then ideally involves maintaining, having resilient vegetation to maintain cover there for training purposes and also just general ecological benefits. But it's also an international problem. This is one that occurs in other countries, Australia, Canada, Great Britain, certainly in Europe and so forth. So it's not one that is isolated to the United States or to the American military at the moment. Now, we have a picture of a typical military firing range there at a rather intensive disturbance at times, certainly not as much perhaps as with mechanized use, but nonetheless it is kind of a bleak landscape. All of them are not necessarily like this, but this is fairly typical of what they may look like. Talking about the type of technologies that might be employed for remediation or restoration of military ranges, when you talk about, there's a number of them, including just removing the soil, there's groundwater pumping and so forth, but the one that we're concerned about, focused on, and a lot of activity and interest in these days is phyto remediation. And that really can break that down into a couple of different components or a couple of different, if not components and types of it. Phyto extraction, where we're actually talking about removal of contaminants, in this case military explosives, by the plant and further metabolism, and or phyto stabilization, which can be a combination of plant and soil amendments and other activities, which just stabilizes those materials in the soil and keeps them there. Limits their movement out or into other biological systems or organisms. Both of those types of phyto extraction, phyto stabilization can be cost effective. It's kind of in its infancy right now, and we're trying to help develop some of the technologies and some of the ways to go by the military. Hopefully they're going to be aesthetically pleasing and suitable for continued training and military operations, but vis-a-vis troop movements and that sort of thing. Witnessed a previous talk on Star Thistle that Dr. Lacey mentioned today. That kind of figures into here from an aesthetic standpoint too. And concurrently with all of this, of course, is a greater knowledge or a greater body of work that's being done on just the whole fate and transport of energetics in soils and in plants and everything else, so that we can eventually proceed with some confidence as to success and everything else. There's a number of military energetics that are involved in this. TNT and RDX are the two most common ones and the ones the most concern. There's some studies done to date suggest fairly strongly that RDX is not as toxic as TNT, but of course that relates to a whole bunch of different characteristics in terms of soil type, moisture, plants, general physiology, and everything else. So this is a sort of a gross over simplification of where we are right now. The overall approach, objectives, or intent of the project is one of identifying, colonizing, rapidly reproducing plants that are tolerant of range-relevant conditions. And we're going to screen those species for tolerance and plant growth traits that, at least on the surface, are important for phytostabilization, phytoremediation. Subsequently, we're going to try to quantify this RDX uptake, translocation, and remediation in selected plants. Hopefully, we'll get at the TNT and other energetic aspects also. And then lastly, but not necessarily not least, but just examine the storage and quality of breakdown products in those plants, their parts, fruits, seeds, and so forth, try to get an idea whether these things are transportable or being biomagnified or biotransported to other organisms. We're right here in this arena right now, and that's what I'm going to be focusing on the rest of the presentation. It stands to reason that it would be nice if we could identify a single plant, but that's probably not realistic given the wide range of ecosystems and military ranges and varying conditions and plants and animals and everything else that's found on them. So we've at least initially started out looking at both forb and grass species, broadleafs, which may be suitable, and we've identified approximately 200. From there, we'll be narrowing it down, or have narrowed it down, to something less than that. The selection criteria, evaluation criteria that we've used generally is a known or suspected tolerance towards energetics. Resilience-related life cycles, those are drought-resistant, that sort of thing. Plant traits, where they have broad, extensive root system, leaf systems. Geographic distribution, certainly from a standpoint of remediation, if it's a broadly distributed plant and it's effective, that would be better than one with a narrow distribution. Seed size, that's somewhat of an arbitrary arbitrary, I guess, is the best word, criteria. Larger seeds are easier to transport, plant, that sort of thing, versus the small, fluffy ones, which you might find in a lot of grasses. Availability of propagules is another criteria that we've used and looked at, if the things are available commercially or where they have to be collected from wild sources. The species we ultimately selected, which I'll get to in a minute, are the widest diversity possible, at least in terms of our criteria and selection abilities. But then the overall goal really is to identify a variety and a wide suite of plant families that seem to indicate that we might get the desired results and be able to grow them within a broad range of ecosystems. Some of the initial forbs, we have a similar list for grasses, which I won't be talking about at all, but it does exist out there. You can see there's a wide range of species, plant growth characteristics, families, and so forth. Another bunch there. Some of them have demonstrated in the past, at least under some circumstances, some remediation characteristics. Jimson weed in particular has shown that, and a couple of others, at least in the literature. I mentioned this a little bit before, but a couple other points here, you know, whether it's annual, biennial, perennial certainly can be important. Native, naturalized, or invasive. On military installations, certainly we want to focus on native plants to the extent possible. That may not be possible in all cases, and we may even have to look at the invasive species eventually for the type of characteristics that are that might lend themselves to the extraction and removal of military energetics. Photosynthesis group, you know, in terms of whether it, well, how it functions that way, C3, C4, seed, fruit, tuber production, how these metabolites, degradation products may be stored, where they're passed on in the seed, whether they're utilized in the tubers. Zone of influence of the roots, whether it's a deep tap root, widespread on the surface, stoloniferous or rhizoniferous reproduction, and you know certainly such things as root lipid concentration. Since at least in some work, it's been shown that these lipids have been useful and for other you know compound remediation, heavy metals in particular. Adverse weather conditions. If it's tolerant there, that's a good thing. Since we have a variety of weather conditions on military installations, if it's self-propagating, that would certainly be a good trait to have versus seed dispersal or versus being able to be reinforced with continual or subsequent influxes of, well, reseeding and so forth, tolerance to firing and muzzle blast, to other disturbances and so forth, and the availability of seeds. These are the final eight we focused on and decided upon, so to speak, a wide variety of groups, as you can see. I won't go through these in any detail, just give you the pictures there of many of you familiar with them, deep taproot in the case of milkweed. Jimson weed has had some other previous work where it's been shown to be quite effective in taking that TNT out of wastewater systems. Yarrow, another dense root base. Again, a wide range of growing conditions in the case of purslane. It's a native species also. Prickly cyan, another native species, annual. Pennsylvania smartweed, widely distributed. Tuber reproduction, at least in some cases, very prolific seed producer in other cases. Pigweed, same sort of characteristics there generally. And morning glory. We've had a germination study where we started out trying to germinate these in laboratory and greenhouse conditions up to 100 milligrams per kilogram of TNT and 1,000 milligrams per kilogram of RDX. This is multiple replicates, multiple groups, and a petri dish there, which you all recognize. This is not has a lot of meaning on it, but gives you an idea of the type of response to from germination that we got with Forbes. They have much lower germination rate altogether than we observed in the grasses. Some of this is due to the physiological characteristics of them, and that the Forbes are just genetically programmed to germinate at different rates and different times. That shows the same thing with RDX. And quite a variation in germination rates with the different species too. As you can see from this figure. Getting toward the selection process here, you can see there's a number of them had no significant difference from the controls. That doesn't mean that they grew better or worse, at least in terms of this presentation anyway. It just means there was no difference in the controls in terms of their germination and so forth. But some of them were very different. Amaranthus retroflexus there, pigweed, was quite tolerant to both TNT and RDX, generally speaking. We moved into pot studies after the germination studies. This is soil collected from military installations. We wanted to use exact type that we've used in that would be used in field situations. Plant growth is monitored, and you can see different ones here, different concentrations of TNT and RDX. This is very high versus the control, so there's quite a difference. And of course, you get different metabolic and plant effects based on the dose in the plant. Root growth, very little root growth here, quite prolific here. And a matter of fact, it didn't affect anything in this example. You can see from this particular graph, we get quite a bit of biomass with pigweed in total here, and it varies with the concentration of low, medium, and high TNT and RDX. A lot of information in this particular figure. I won't go into it with detail. This shows the variation you get even within a species over the different number of each individual pot and each individual plant. So that's an analysis factor that has to be entered out. Common milkweed. More of the same. Biomass, quite a considerable difference based on tops versus roots and in total with different exposures. What does that all lead to? Well, out of eight species screened, we thought we had about five of them that exhibited medium to good germination ability. None of the well-germinating forbs were significantly inhibited by RDX. Two species, smartweed and prickly cyan, appeared to be stimulated by high RDX in the soil, strangely enough. We got good growth rates with them with higher concentrations of RDX. That may have some implications for the future. And one species, the pigweed, which I mentioned, appears to have the most tolerance for it, and that's the one we'll be focusing on in the future. I've rushed through this quite quickly, given a lot of information, and if nothing else, hopefully, kind of giving you a stimulus to think about some of these things and I got thought processes going as to where we are in this project and in others. And last but not least, the acknowledgments. This part funded by CERTIP, by ERDIC, and certainly by the university and others. So, if I have any time, I'll take questions.
You can get one question if anybody has one.
I think it might have been a dance contest or something. Liberal arts.
Actually, I was going to ask just one question. So when they take up TNT or RDX, mm-hmm. is it still in a form where you need to process the plant material as kind of a hazardous material?
Well, it isn't hazardous in that form, but you have to do process analyze the plant to determine whether it's in the raw form or in the TNT or RDX form in the plant or whether it's in other metabolites. Generally, it gets metabolized into something else. Some plants don't take it up at all. It just kills them before they even have a chance to do that. So it varies. It really varies with the plant. So. Ma'am. Well, we have to extract the remaining amount from the soil, obviously, to see how much has been taken up. Then we have to try to measure the amount that's in the plant, either as RDX or either as energetic material or as their metabolites. And if it's in the plant, what part of the plant is it in? The roots, the leaves, you know, the top ground portion, and or the seeds. And then we're trying to work on mass balance equations right now to find out how much is actually moving in and what form it's moving in. Well, that's part of the overall long-term management, potentially. If the material is just absorbed into the plant and it stays there as raw material, it's TNT or RDX, let's say, and then the plant dies and it gets recycled back into the soil, you're not really accomplishing anything, so you'd have to remove that. However, if it's metabolized into degradation products, non-toxic or otherwise, or gets utilized in the development or building of cellulose or seed material or something else, then you wouldn't have to do that. So it's the intent, of course, is to try to identify some that we would not have to harvest or anything else. It'd be sort of a self-perpetrating system there that's going to remove and remediate that material out of the soils, out of the range soils and ecosystems.
Sure.
The smart weed, the problem, or the
well,
TNT? I guess we don't know that. I certainly don't. Maybe some people do. But part of the impetus for this, of course, is the movement of these materials into groundwater, into surface water systems. So, to the extent that smart weed might be good in removing it from those systems, certainly that would be of interest.
So we should probably end the session. If you have any more questions for Tom, please ask them. Thanks to all the presenters.